Welcome to the How Do We Get Here podcast, where your thoughts get caught. It's your boy, Marwane.
What's going on, y'all? It is Gabe. Welcome back. We are here.
Yes, sir. And we have a special guest today. He needs no introduction. One of our oldest friends, one of our, brothers, I would say. We've known this man for quite some time. He's done a lot of work, and we'll, you know, dive into that. But no further, Mr. Rodney Corsi, welcome.
Peace. Woo! What's going on?
Welcome.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming to our show. I feel like all of our guests we've known for like over 10 years. Most of our guests that we've had.
And that's beautiful because they're doing big things.
Exactly. I mean? That was one of the main things that we kind of wanted to center around in our podcast is with our guests is a lot of people that we've known for a little while because that kind of brings a lot of the, I feel like the genuine conversations and kind of knowing like, you know, you've known me for a little while since high school, middle school days, same with him. You guys have a different type of relationship too. So,
how did we get here?
Exactly. So, just the premises of the show. So, we're really, really happy to see you.
I'm grateful.
We're really
for the
happy to have
Gabe.
You here.
Thank you, Mar.
Of course, man. Thank you.
Long time coming. We've been working on this and we finally got it done.
So, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Here. Well, let's kick things off. You know, as y'all already know, it's been a little while since we've seen y'all. So, you know, let's catch everybody up. So, Mar, how has everything been for you? Let's do a little run around of like, what's one big thing that's happened for you since the last time we recorded? Yes.
I mean, I wouldn't really say anything big has happened. It's just been really normal. You know, I mean, it's only been like, a few weeks since we last seen each other.
How's your summer been so far?
Summer's going good, though. Summer's going good. Layden just finished his summer program, so that's cool. Work is going really well, surprisingly well, actually.
Praise the Lord.
For being in the middle of the summer, you know, working at a career school. Nobody goes to school in the middle of the summer.
You be complaining about that job. This is very odd to hear that you saying that this is good.
You know what, though? But that's what I'm saying. Like, so it's been going good. I think, you know, I've been trying to change my mentality about certain things. And in fact, Rodney, for my birthday, had gave me a book, You Owe You. Right, the Eric Thomas joint. I've been reading that
nice
a little bit too, and it's a lot of good stuff in there too.
Yeah, Eric is a dope dude.
Yeah, for sure. And one thing, you know, I'll touch on is the victim mentality that a lot of us, you know, sometimes put on ourselves. Like, you know, we blame the world for what's happening instead of just taking accountability and action in our lives and, you know, and handling our, you know, our business. So I think when it comes to, you know, just like I said, with work, I've been doing that. So it's been going a lot smoother. So
I'm praise the Lord. Yeah, okay. Yeah. We love to see it.
You, how you doing?
I am good. Summer has been pretty well for me, I guess, you know, just living my life like it's golden.
All right. You should be. Shout out to Jill Scott.
You know, just try to do what I can with what I got, honey. Okay. You know, just adjusting. I feel like that, in the beginning of the year, a lot has happened for me. So, like, you know, as the transition of the summer has been coming along, I've been adjusting and coming to myself and what my needs are. I actually had a conversation with my dad last week, and we talked about, like, a lot of my needs and what exactly I'm looking for and all of that. And I told him that I feel like the majority of my life, I always used to do, you know, I've said this in the past, I always used to do things for a lot of people and I always used to lack about myself. And a lot of personal things in my life, because of the fact that I put people before me, I was negligent on, and I have a lot of risks and consequences for them that I had to, you know, recover on.
Is that like one of your love languages?
Yes, giving. Yeah. That's definitely one of my love language is giving, spirit of giving. And for me is quality time. So it's quality time and giving, both of those. So I have learned to navigate putting myself first and give to me first. And that's kind of where I've been navigating for this past few months. So
it's awesome.
Yeah. So it's been pretty good. Work has been good. Work has been very good, actually, for me too. So, you know, we're moving.
Listen, work is going. Work
listen,
is working.
Work is working. My mama told me not to leave that job. mama told me when you get a job and they don't got no problems with don't tell nobody, y'all, but I work from home, so you know how work from home is. Mm-hmm. We don't do shit.
See, and that's the thing. So with my job, they
we
were,
don't do
they
shit.
They were trying to get me to
speak
work from home.
Speak for yourself, homie.
Oh, sorry. I don't do shit. But I do work. Let me be clear.
Yeah, I know.
But you know, I will literally I take my dad to the doctor while I'm on the clock.
You said, speak for yourself. Okay. Wait a minute. No.
Well, you know, I don't listen.
All right, so it's safe to say Gabe don't be doing shit at home when he's on the clock.
Barely.
But see, they, my
the
job
most work
to
I do is on
from
Tuesdays.
Home, and as good as it sounds, I don't think that would work for me. Just like the way that I am.
And you know your career is a little bit different, too, because you have to actually interact with the students.
I mean, look, I could just call people up and set appointments and stuff like that, but that's I don't thrive there. You know what I mean? I thrive with actually meeting and interacting with people, you know what I mean? Like, so that would just make the job miserable. So
it's cool that you have that kind of self-awareness, that you can determine that very quickly. Like, yeah, I wouldn't be productive if this was my professional circumstance.
Right, of course.
That was something they talked about in the book, too.
E.T.?
E.T., yeah.
Okay, I didn't even read the book. I just got it for
you.
I know that's right.
E.T. is my guy, yeah. I follow his work, listen to his podcast. But I watched an interview he did promoting the book.
Mm-hmm.
So when you invited me to the party and I went to the store, it's funny. I was either going to get you Wallow's book or E.T.'s book.
Okay.
And just knowing what I know more about E.T., I thought that would have related to you more.
Yeah.
Especially in regards to your relationship with Jamie. Since he was a pastor, and E.T. was a pastor, too. Yeah. So I just felt like the messages would resonate more from a personal place.
Sure.
Since like you that. Grew up within the realm of the church.
For sure. Yeah, no, that definitely, that was a, like, spot on for you. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah,
like,
word.
Yeah, for real. But, yeah, it was just self-assessment, you know, assessing self. Like, I forget the exact wording he used for it, but it's like, you know, you have your group of people, like, when you're trying to be successful. Like, mm-hmm. nobody's successful by themselves. So, mm-hmm. trying to come up, you're going
to
have a team,
you have to have your
team,
right?
Mm-hmm. And he used it as, like as an airplane, right? You have your pilot, you have your flight attendant, you have your ground crew. And I forget the other one it was, but, you know, I'm a flight attendant.
Right.
Right? And I know that because that's what we do. We interact on a personal level and things like that, where you have your pilot, where they fly the plane, like, and they're in charge, and, you know, they get you to point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
And certain situations would call you to change roles.
Your role.
Right?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm not always a flight attendant. Sometimes I have to be a pilot. Sometimes I have to be ground control. It all depends on the situation. You know?
And those are all qualities of a good leader.
Of a leader. Yeah. I was just about to say that. Those are all qualities of a leader, especially mm-hmm. because that's what you are in your position.
Yeah,
you know, because, you know, that's one of the things that they teach us as leaders in those positions is that's technically the reason why they give us to us, because we should be able to be fluid in mm-hmm. everything.
Absolutely.
In the business. You know what I'm saying? So that's a great quality that we all should have. So,
you know, Jason Wilson speaks to that. My bad, Gabe.
No, of course.
You know, he talks about, you know, one of the factors that makes you a comprehensive man is being a man who can be whoever he needs to be in any given moment.
Yep. Code switching.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I mean, we can say, I feel like code switching has like a negative connotation to it.
I don't think it is.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I don't think code switching is a negative connotation.
Okay.
I definitely feel like that code switching, in a sense, is you can use it for your advantage because of the fact that you don't necessarily need to be. I feel like with the reason why people use it as a negative is because people feel like that they don't have to be their authentic selves while doing the code switching.
Okay.
Like you're something that you're not.
Exactly.
Like switching like that.
Like. Exactly. Like switching a completely different personality.
Yeah.
With me, however, I am not, with me, I feel like that I'm the same way in the job and at my workplace that I am like over here. Mm-hmm. Yes, I may say things differently, but my character is still the same.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I feel like that's the difference between, I feel like that's the positive of code switching, because of the fact that if your character doesn't change, but of course you're going to, like, you're not going to say nigga around a whole bunch of white people, but you know what I'm saying?
I mean, some might, some, but, well, yeah, but yeah, you know,
I will not.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it's also about, you know, reading the room and things like
and
that.
And reading Absolutely. The room.
And
so
not to take away from what Rodney was saying. It's just like you said, like, as a man, like, being prepared for any situation. right? You know, self-awareness and like we said, reading the room and knowing, you know, what who you got to be in a, what certain situation.
Of course.
Right? Mm-hmm. Oh, excuse me.
That's all good.
So, Rod, let's talk about you. What's something that you did this week, or how have you been? What's some things that you've been working on? I know we're probably going to touch on that in the end, but, you know, briefly, what you've been working on.
Well, I mean, in reference to summer and just big things that have happened over the course of this summer, I got married, which is probably the biggest
Congratulations!
Thing. Congratulations! My wife and I finally did it.
After nine plus years
being together, you know, it was a beautiful ceremony with our families.
I love that.
Handwritten vows. My sister-in-law was our officiant. We rented a beautiful Airbnb up in Morris County, New Jersey, right on the lake. And it was just, it was great, man.
I love that.
It was a little overwhelming at times, but it all came together. Just, yo, I'm getting married, bro.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And it's like...
Leading up to it or like the actual day?
The whole just as it got closer, like that week was when I really started to feel those feels. Like, wow, I'm really doing this. And it felt good, you know what I'm saying? You just have those normal, like, nervous jitters. But it's a significant step you are taking in life. And what I say, what I've said to people privately, I want to share this on your pod.
Of course.
Is when we made the announcement, this is how I knew I was ready to be married. Because when we made the announcement to our families, I was curious, just keeping it real, I was curious to see how I was going to feel internally. And when I shared it with our families, bro, I felt great. Like, it felt good to say, I'm getting ready to marry this woman. And that's when I knew, you say that you want to get married, you've been with somebody, you think you're ready to get married.
But when it feels right.
The inside is really going to tell
the
story.
It's that gut feeling.
And it felt good on the inside.
I love
that. And I've shared that with a lot of people. And one of my closest friends said, yo, I think it's dope that you were able even to, like, acknowledge that within yourself. So it felt good. It feels great. And, that was the biggest thing. You know, my birthday's in July, July 16th, so I had a beautiful birthday. Awesome. But other than that, working and on my paddleboard as often as I can be. You know, I live very close to the river, so I try to go out, man. I check the tide every morning. If the tide is high, I'm out.
Ain't nothing but a Jersey Shore, man.
That's straight up.
Mr. Rodney Corsi, Mr. Hot Rod is off the menu. He is no longer a single man. He is married. Not saying he was saying before, but he is officially married.
Now he showed the wedding ring. I love to see it.
Yeah, he is off the market.
So y'all been together for 9 years.
Yeah.
That's what's up.
Yeah, very long time.
So does it feel different now being a married man, like, versus not?
Not yet.
That's what they all say.
Yeah, not yet, but, you know, I'm saying to myself, you do have to move a little differently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you're definitely more aware of... You know, growing up, I don't know if you guys heard this, but I always would hear it. And now being married, it makes sense now. People would say, you know, you're single until you're married.
Yep.
You know, something I would always hear. And I never truly got it, but I get it now.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you just have to move different and just not that, you know, your decisions can impact your partner before. But now that you're married, man, this is your legacy.
It's bigger. Yeah.
This is bigger. It's so much at stake.
Yep.
So those type of things are changing, you know, being more intentional, more focused, more intentional with my time. And just, again, you know, like, how is this going to set us up for this next step and the following step to grow and build the life that we want?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So change in that sense.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I love that.
Yeah.
So going into, you know, the reason why we're here now, right?
Mm-hmm.
You founded Garden City Hip Hop, you know.
Yes, sir.
Out of the blog era back in like 09, 2010.
Yes, sir.
Right, to create a path to the music industry, which is amazing, right? I mean, it's crazy. Like I said, you know, we come from
2009. Such humble beginnings,
right? And to see someone that we grew up with, you know, doing such big things, like, it's an amazing.
Yeah, program. I remember when you were starting Garden State Hip Hop. That was like when we first graduated.
Yeah, first graduated high school.
You know, look at it now; it's huge. You know, like I mentioned that. I was telling people that I was having you on the show, and I was like, "You have you ever heard of Garden State Hip Hop?" And pretty much everyone that I asked, you know, definitely knew what I was talking about. I was like, I went to school with the guy that started that, so yeah, he's gonna be on my show.
That's dope.
It's a great feeling. But what drove you to move from clicking links to launching your own platform in that way?
Man, that's a great question. So I was going into my sophomore year of college. You know, naturally, I want to take it back. What even put me on a path to pursue a career in entertainment. Mm-hmm. So at Ocean, my senior year at Ocean Township High School, neither one of you guys know this, but one of the assistant basketball coaches, his wife was Kanye's attorney. And he and I was very close. And, like, you know, during the course of the basketball season, he would tell us these stories, not flexing.
Hold on.
But just telling us. Because
you see,
like,
how,
you know,
small
I was
this
at a
fucking
party
world
with Jay-Z
is.
Or just here. Not really flexing, just telling us what his weekend was like.
That's crazy.
And we're like, nah, no
That's
way, man.
Nuts.
You're a middle school teacher and assistant basketball
That's
coach.
That's crazy.
No way. But anyway, he and I were very close, me and this particular coach. And he was kind enough to take me to Kanye's tour stop for the Glow in the Dark tour at the amphitheater in Camden. Mm-hmm. Unbeknownst to me, thanks to him and his wife, it was a full access experience. Mm. So I was personally introduced to Kanye West mm-hmm. and Pharrell Williams.
Yep.
I'm standing backstage. I see Rihanna. I see Lupe Fiasco, GLC, Consequence, Stephen Hill, who was a big-time executive at BET Network. Some of the most influential forces in music. Right. And when I tell this story, I get excited. And this is why I think with youth and kids, experience is so important. Mm-hmm. Taking them places and allowing them to see mm-hmm. things. Because I was just soaking up everything.
Yes, right. Inspired.
And being back there, everyone's working. You don't know what their roles are, but clearly everyone has a responsibility. Yep. Mm-hmm. But guys, they were having so much fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
While working.
Right.
And I'm like, man, like we are right now with this podcast set up. But we're, you know, we're working.
Exactly.
And I'm like, man, I want to do this. You know what I'm saying? So I went off to college. When I went away to school, I declared as a sports management major. Mm-hmm. You know, because sports and entertainment go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, that can get me closer to music, sports. So, and this is the way God works sometimes. So the woman I sat with to, like, build out my, my 4 years of college, mm-hmm. I guess, like, not necessarily a guidance counselor, mm-hmm. right? What is it called in college? I forget. Like class advisor?
I think it's like a class advisor or a mentor.
Yeah,
or
well, anyway, I sit with her. She was a dope woman when I was at DSU, and she told me about her background and her career. Yeah. So she worked on a show, Teen Summit.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that when we were kids on BET? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She was like their media relations person or like comms director.
Nice.
And I was like, that's interesting. What is that?
Right.
Oh, mass communications with a concentration in public relations. I'm like, if she worked on Teen Summit, that's BET. That's 106 in Park. That's Rap City. That's hip hop.
Right.
That's what I want to do.
Right.
I'm going to change my major to mass communications with a concentration in public relations. So that was the start, right?
Okay.
Those experiences and being put on that path. And going back to the point I was making about youth and experiences, I didn't know what my options were in life until I stepped on a college campus. You know what I'm saying? It took that experience with the basketball coach and then going to college, a woman of my culture who I can relate to in a different way, which I didn't have when I was a teenager
of
in
course.
High school.
Yep. Right.
And she was like, nah, young bro, this is what you got to do if this is what you're interested in.
Yeah.
Right? So fast forward, ended up, I regret this decision to this day. Didn't stay at Delaware State. Wish I did. Anyway, you can't turn back the hands of time.
Mm-hmm.
So going into my sophomore year of college, you know, I'm spending time on blogs. I'm trying to find different opportunities in the music business, whether it's PA work, internships. And, you know, I'm on all the hottest blogs, soaking up all the hottest news in music and hip hop. That's right. Not right. That's Ill Roots. Kevin Nottingham, Rock the Dub. Who else was popping back then? Two Dope Boys. The list goes on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed they weren't covering many artists from Jersey. The only two I think you would frequently see on those platforms was Ransom and Joe Budden.
Yeah, I was just,
and that was really it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm like, yo, I know people from our area who are dope and like surrounding towns who are talented enough to be on these platforms. Mm-hmm. How about I create my own blog? And no BS. When I was in the shower, the name just hit me, Garden State Hip Hop.
Yeah.
Right? And I knew I had something. And I'm sure even with the podcast or other things you guys have done, it's a weird feeling when you know you have a dope idea.
Yep.
I can admit that.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people would keep it real.
For sure.
Because it's like, oh, damn. Yeah.
When it hits you, it's like, Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, yo, that might work. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Hit. This might hit.
So there were some insecurities with that. Like, yo, I know I have a cool idea, but I don't know if I'm prepared to do this on my own. Mm. So I brought my cousin aboard, my cousin Sha, and it was strategic to bring Sha on because he was one of my older cousins. He was going into, I think, his junior year at Monmouth University. He was a mass comm major, a journalism major. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And as a side hustle, he would write bios and other media assets for local talent. Mm-hmm. So that was my instant pipeline to the local music scene by bringing my cousin on board. And he was always about his business.
Right.
He was a little bit more mature than I was. Right. So I knew that things would be on point with him on my side. So that was the launch of Garden State Hip Hop, man. And I mean, I don't know where we were going with the questions.
I never knew, honestly, I never knew that that was like your whole story. Yeah. When I first, because in high school and, you know, your whole academic career for me, I remember you in sports.
Right.
So when you started Garden State Hip Hop, I was like, okay, so I knew that you liked hip hop. I knew that you were in African American club, all of that stuff. So mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily know the backstory of you actually wanting to be like, you know, you saw the Kanye concert and you got so inspired mm-hmm. and you wanted to be in entertainment and all of that, because in high school and all that, you weren't, you know, you was, like, it would be different because of the fact, like, you know, with me, I was in plays,
yeah,
musicals.
You were like the chorus guy.
Right,
we like,
you know, so it kind of made sense.
Everyone had their little, like, labels.
Exactly. Yeah, so it kind of made sense for me to, like, okay, so, like, all right, so it made sense for Gabe to kind of be in media or entertainment because that nigga was doing all that bullshit.
Right.
So
you just never saw that on Rock.
I never really necessarily saw that. So that's why I'm like, that's what's up. And that's inspiring as well. Because you excelled so much from doing that. Mm-hmm. And one of the things about like when you have a passion or a dream is the consistency of it.
Absolutely.
And you stay consistent with your dream as far as going into school, knowing what you wanted to do, speaking, just like how you said, how God works. God places people in your life for a reason mm-hmm. at the right time.
He was walking with you.
He was, he was walking right by your side, friend.
All glory to him.
Okay.
Yeah, for real. But so Garden State Hip Hop, that just came out of nowhere. Now it's like a household name, which is crazy, like I said. As a, you know, publicist and event producer, like looking back at those Garden State Hip Hop shows, are there any moments that make you, you know, either shake your head or stuff that you could laugh about now?
Let me dig, because I didn't want to go on my whole like tangent, but let me dig in a little bit more.
Yeah.
So what really popped things off with the platform was the first Garden State Hip Hop Cypher in 2011.
I remember that.
We did that at the Turntablism show here in Jersey City.
That was with Encore.
We shot that here.
Was that with Encore or no?
No, Encore did 2013. That was in Newark.
Okay.
At the Connect spot. Shout out to my boy Primo. But anyway, the guys at the ISM show, I pieced this together, of course, being inspired by the BET Cypher. Mm-hmm. And then my partner in that project, Jonathan Edwards, who grew up with us in Ocean Township, mm-hmm. who's an incredible photographer, videographer, cinematographer. He does it all. He was one of the only cats I knew when we were teenagers that was uploading content, like dope content, on YouTube, had built a YouTube channel.
Nice.
Had a skate DVD that I bought for $20. He had the skills. So when I created the platform, he was the first person I called.
Sure.
He shot my promo video. He did the banner for the website. Mm. You know, any idea I had, I would present to him and he would bring it to life, similar to the Cypher. So I'm like, yo, man, this is what I want to do. Book the venue, book the artists. I think that year we had 16 artists performing a cypher. Mm. We had 4 rounds. I was still kind of camera shy, so I had my cousin Sha like introduce the first 3 mm-hmm. rounds and I mm-hmm. closed it out. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Still like insecure in a position.
Because
and,
this you is know, your baby.
Right.
This is like your
and
thing.
It's brand new though.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then also I kind of wanted to have that Russell Simmons approach.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? The one that comes
like
out.
Like Def Jam.
You know, like Def Jam, you come out the
he comes out in the end and shit.
Thank you for your presence. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, I like the idea of being that guy.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, that's the thing that set off Garden State Hip Hop for real, the 2011 Garden State Hip Hop Cypher. And I had a post on my IG stories a few days ago because I'm like, the beauty in the platform was it just came from a genuine love for hip hop. I wasn't really trying to monetize anything. I paid out of pocket for the ciphers and a lot of the earlier things that I did, the concerts, all that stuff I just paid for and didn't try to like come up with little hustles to make money off the talent and that are prevalent in our industry, unfortunately. It just came from a pure love. And for me, the payoff was knowing that I saw something through and it was dope. It wasn't so much about like, and this is the issue with a lot of content creators now, you're doing it for the reaction, for the engagement, and the instant gratification, as opposed to doing it for you first and saying, I'm going to do something to the best of my ability with all the resources that I have access to. And when I put it out, yo, we did that. That's the payoff. And that was the beauty with the 2011 through 2013 Garden State Hip Hop Cyphers. But in particular, the 2011, I always remember when John did the final edit, I said, yo, put it up the next day. No marketing rollout, no PR strategy, no monetization strategies, no ad campaigns.
You just got to let that shit go.
Yo, we did this. Drop that shit tomorrow, yo.
And probably had the most views on that
and
shit.
Just ran it up. You know what I'm saying?
As you should.
All organic. None of that, bro. Blasted it all over my Facebook. Put it on the website. Check this out. Boom, boom, boom. And it just, you know, it just caught eyes.
But that's usually how it, that's those are usually the best moments. And that's usually what happens with, and what hits is those organic and authentic, you know, contact and those moments of that you just put it out. You don't have to think about it. Because when you think about it, that means that you're just stalling. And that also brings you doubt. So, like, when you have that doubt in your mind, that's what's going to bring you back. So, if you just put that shit out and then you just do what you have to do and just let what you've been doing, let the universe or let God work and do what he has to do with your content and with your vision, then it's obviously going to excel and succeed.
Absolutely, man. And even if it doesn't.
Exactly.
I'm big in, yo, if it feels good to you, like,
be proud
genuinely
of that.
Feels good to you.
Right.
That's it, man. It don't matter what nobody else got to say.
Success doesn't necessarily have to be like anything monetary or anything. It's just success within self.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Yo,
I'm proud of myself for even being able to do that.
Gratification and things like that.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
And people will talk themselves out of things. I'm sure even with the podcast and your platform that you guys are building, you could have come up with 100 reasons why you shouldn't do it. But we're here, yo, and you're doing it. So there's like there's a power in that. There's something you have to honor in that. You know what I'm saying? So, so from the 2011 Cypher, then we did 2012 at the Wave Boutique in Long Branch, which burned down shortly after we recorded it there. Those guys were dope. So that was kind of like, it was unfortunate that they lost their business, but it was cool that we kind of.
That you guys were like the last people.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Yeah.
And then, you know, 2013.
I was just about to say, that's history.
Yeah. And then 2013 at the Connect spot. So over the course of this time, man, 2009 to 2013, of course, you know, blogging with the website, doing original content, producing events. I did my first concert. What was that? 2012 in Newark, at the Metropolitan. I did a Nickel Night event. It was it was whack. You know, nobody really came out.
But it was your first one, so,
yeah,
you know.
Like, the room was too dark. It was my first show. I didn't get paid that night because I got the space for free from my man who owned it, who owned the Law of Space. But, again, going back to just honoring yourself. Yo, man, I organized a concert, bro. Yeah. My first one. Hit or miss, I did it.
In your 20s.
So you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I saw it through. I did it. And, yeah, I brought out less than 10 people. But, yo, I got less than 10 people. That's better than zero.
Exactly.
That's just the way I've always tried to look at things.
Yep.
I mean, at the end of the day, you put eyes on the state of New Jersey as far as hip hop.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, like you were saying, you know, weren't paying any attention to New Jersey. And now, you know, I feel like across the world, it's all people ever talk about. You know, even outside of the country.
We're having a moment
talk about
now.
Jersey
Club. Like, they love everyone they incorporating love the sound into their music.
For sure. So, you know, and you played a huge part in that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You got to give credit where credit is due. You definitely played a huge part in that. So through your journey and all that, if you had to give that, if that was a mixtape, what would the title be?
Man, that's a great question. That's a cool question, too. What would the title be?
That's gay right there. Gay be thinking okay. about something like that. I think he'd be using ChatGPT.
Shut your ass.
It would be called Stay the Course.
Stay the Course?
Stay the Course. Right. Yeah, like a play on my last That's name, fine. Too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
Oh, wow. Yeah. Look at you with a double entendre.
Yeah.
Look at you.
I think I'm going to go with right. Stay That's the
fire.
Course.
That's fine.
And I just wanted to add this. So, you know, we did the ciphers, the concerts, the content. I was able to parlay that into internships in New York City. You know, I work for Sue Marcus, who's a very respected, you know, industry publicist. We actually bumped into each other this summer while picking up credentials for the Tribeca Festival, which was kind of like a full circle moment. So that was really dope. I spent 6 months with her out in Brooklyn, New York. Then I went to another record label who had an office. Their main office was in Nashville, Tennessee, but they had a satellite office in downtown Newark, New Jersey. So I was a summer intern there. That was in 2014. After that experience, I decided that I wasn't going to work any more unpaid internships.
As you shouldn't, because you deserve.
You know, and got aggressive with the job hunt. So I just wanted to add those pieces and how building the platform, it coming from a space of just passion, love, and joy, and how I parlayed that into bigger opportunities.
A lot of doors.
To stay on course.
On course of what you want.
With my actual aspirations and goals, right. while helping artists in the process.
Right.
I love that. So speaking of the hip-hop music and Garden State hip-hop, you know, you've stated that one of the biggest things was the cypher. So clearly we know that Garden State Hip Hop isn't just a website, but a full-blown platform bringing, you know, publicity to rappers, creative consulting, event production, like you said, mm-hmm. with the cypher. So how do you balance the art of Garden State Hip Hop and the premises of that and the business aspect of it as well, so you can continue to bring some sort of income and business in as well with that?
That's a very good question. Man, you know, I've battled with that, to be honest with you. Just knowing just some of the things that exist in the business, and you do hit that point where it's like, yo, this is my life. This is how I, you know, cover all my expenses
right.
and pay my bills. So, you know, PR has become the lane to make it a legitimate business
mm-hmm.
that's earning money, and I'm paying my taxes every year. But in terms of the creative, I'll never charge an artist to perform on a show. You know what I'm saying? Any shows I've done. So I did a show right before COVID, NJ Live 3, which is my New Jersey concert series for the viewers. I did New Jersey Live Volume 1. That was in Asbury Park on Cookman Ave. Then I did NJ Live Volume 2 at the Saint, also in Asbury Park. And then I did NJ Live 3 at House of Independence in Asbury Park. Mm. That was right before COVID in 2019.
Right.
I was able to get Ciroc on board to be the presenting sponsor.
Nice.
Wow,
for the concert. We did 3 signature cocktails, step and repeat with all our logos, 2 cocktail waitresses. So I kind of lost track with your question. Can you repeat that?
Yeah, absolutely. So so how do you balance art and how do you balance your art with Garden State Hip Hop and the business and everything that you do?
I guess, because I'm trying to find the words, I guess I could just say just being practical.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to charge an artist to perform on a show. Yeah. I'm not. That's something I refuse to do.
Yeah.
You know?
But you also stated that as well, you know, by also keeping with the business, you've kept it with PR, and that's also the business aspect. So you have
PR
that balance.
Been the anchor of the business for me to do things just for the love of music and
right.
the love for hip-hop. Mm-hmm. So me is just being practical with everything that I do, right? If I do have a service where it will require payment, it's legitimate.
Right.
You know, when I talk about the concerts, what I'm really saying is I'm not going to book a venue, right? I'm out of, say, take for example, I rent a venue. I'm out 3 G's. I'm not going to say, yo, I'm giving $1,000 performance slots to up-and-coming artists.
You got to sell tickets.
To make 3 grand, you
right.
know, say I have 6 artists at 1,000 a pop, that's 6K. I make a $3,000 profit and I pay back what I just spent on a venue.
Yeah.
I'm not going to come up on people like that.
Right.
I don't believe in stuff like that.
Right.
So it's just being practical and just really trying to have trying to sustain that artistic integrity, because I think of myself as an artist, right? With the ciphers, with the concerts, those are like my albums. This is why, like, everything is kind of like I've done, you know, with hip hop, as people who grow up with the culture, within the culture, it's about being hot. It's about being trendy. Mm-hmm. Some would say Garden State Hip Hop fell off, or Rodney wasn't always consistent. I wasn't always on top of things. That was intentional. Mm-hmm. For me, personally, I'm a person that kind of moves at my own pace. Yeah. And two, it's like, yo, these events, these shows, everything is like an album to me. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, I did New Jersey Live, volume 1 through 3. 4 is coming. Mm-hmm. I'm just living my life and I'm being inspired right now. Yeah. You know, that what inspired First Verse, what I'm doing now, my live performance series, you guys can go to the Garden State Hip Hop Instagram to check those out, was being inspired by On the Radar, mm-hmm. being inspired by On the Block, being inspired by Colors. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, wow, this is dope. Yeah. I'm going to create my own version of this in some capacity and try to keep it original and authentic to me.
Yeah.
So we have volume 1 and volume 2 of that, and now I'm in early stages of volume 3 of piecing it together. So it's like, yo, I'm like Erykah Badu said, I'm an artist and I'm sensitive about my shit.
I was just about to say, yeah.
And it's like, yo, I live life. I take a step back and pay attention to the culture and what everybody's doing. I try to keep my ear to the street because this is what I love. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And then when I'm ready to make my move, I make my move. Mm-hmm. But I'm not on anybody's time.
Right.
And I'm not always chasing algorithms.
Right. That's what I was just about to say. That's one of the negatives about the industry now, and especially with executives. They're not, most of the executives that are in these labels aren't artists. You know what I'm saying?
They're not creative people. They're business people.
So that's why with the question that I asked, you have to, it's good that we still have executives and publicists and people that are in these spaces that still have the passion of music and artistry.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? They're not scammers.
Right.
And they're not people that are trying to make a profit off of somebody else. Yeah. They see the vision and the passion from the artist itself. And that's one thing that I really noticed with Garden State Hip Hop as well, is like you said, it's not necessarily with the trends, or it's not necessarily
a tabloid publication.
No, it's not like the Shade Room, not right. like Bossa.
And I'm not knocking those people.
No.
There's enough space for everybody to exist.
Absolutely. And for you, I think that for Garden State Hip Hop, it's very authentic in the aspect of hip hop music mm-hmm. and being a hip hop artist.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's what brings the difference with it, because of the passion that you have of hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, the first, like one of the first experiences that you had was with at a Kanye West concert.
Mm-hmm.
Legend. You know what I'm saying? Hip hop legend. You know what I'm saying? So with that, actually, you know, my next question is, what's one lyric or line from a hip hop track that you usually use as a lesson in conversation?
Wow, that's a really good question, Gabe. Damn.
You know what? I got one, and it's crazy that we're talking about Kanye.
Okay.
This is a good one. This is a good one. I swear, I'm like, this has been stuck in my head like for years. I think this came off of the Graduation album. It always be haters, that's the way it is.
Hating niggas marry hated bitches and have hated kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That line, I don't know why, that just resonates with me.
That's crack music with The Game. Yeah, that's off.
That was off for Graduation. Right?
Late registration.
Mm-hmm. Late registration. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Late registration. That's a good one for me. Yeah.
I'm trying to think, because it was definitely probably going to be like a Kanye lyric for sure, because in spite of everything, he's still kind of like
he
my goat.
Still is that, yeah.
We were coming up. I mean,
can Kanye, I come back to that, Gabe?
Kanye of course.
Cool.
Right. Gabe, do you have one?
Do I have a lyric?
Yeah. How about, I got another one. Check yourself before you wreck yourself.
That's cute. A good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
That's for you.
Me, man. Personally, I feel like one of my lyrics every day, because like I just said, living my life like it's golden. I'm a very huge Jill Scott fan. Waking up in the morning feeling fresh to death. I'm so blessed. Yes, yes. That is one lyric that I always live by. Scott? That is Jill Scott. Yeah,
I like that.
Shout out Jill Scott.
Yeah, shout out to Jilly from Philly. Jilly from Philly.
Yes, sir.
God damn it! That's what I'm talking about. Talking about like how much, so your passion for artists, Rod, you know, you're saying how much of a passion that you have for artists and everything. So you're pouring so much into your artists and events and into the community and to the culture. So talk about who's pouring into you. How do you protect your mental space, your mental peace? You know, you discuss how you do paddle boarding and all of that. So what exactly are some things that center yourself outside of the chaos?
Yeah, man, it's definitely a lot of physical activity. As I mentioned, and you mentioned, paddle boarding is one of them. I've been boxing for 2 years. I'm a part of the Asbury Park Police Athletic League. Shout out to everybody involved with that club and program. You know, we're doing an excellent job, especially for youth in the area. So yeah, boxing, I love to hike, you know, my calisthenics, you can always find me on a pull-up bar. You may that see me post true, a video or two on Instagram.
Yes.
You know, I dabble in yoga a lot. My wife, she got her Reiki certification.
Ooh.
So, you know, we practice some of those little practices in the house a bit.
I love Reiki.
Yeah. And it's like dope, man. Like we went to an event that my sister-in-law hosted. And I mean, I don't know if you guys give that stuff the time of day. Well, more so Mark, because you just said you like it, right?
Yeah, Mark, you know, but, he be trying to be of, you know,
it's,
love Jesus. I love Jesus.
I'm interested, you know, and I'm open to it. Like it.
You talking about yoga?
No, like Reiki, that's like more spirituality. Reiki, yeah, Reiki, yeah.
Listen, man, I got a massage therapy program in my school, bro. I
know Look Reiki, at you.
I know what Reiki is. Okay.
But,
I mean,
dope.
No, I've never like really done Reiki, no.
Yeah.
You saying I should try it?
You should try it, man. Actually, last summer I hosted my first hip hop wellness workshop, a collaboration with the Phoenix. So
wasn't it at the House of Independence or no?
It was at Healing with Harmony.
Okay,
that was an event that I didn't attach the brand to, but I was the co-producer.
Gotcha.
Through my evolving relationship with the Phoenix. Mm. So anyone not familiar with the Phoenix, they're a national nonprofit organization for people struggling with in recovery and seeking sober lifestyles. And their one brick and mortar location in the state of New Jersey is actually in Belmar. So the site manager and I have a really good relationship. So she allowed me to come in and use the facility for a hip hop wellness workshop. I had a trap yoga session done with Janae Fenter, who we grew up with.
I love her.
She facilitated that. Then I had a sound bowl healing with my homie Michael Mills, co-founder of KYDS based in Asbury Park. They're doing great work for the area too, for local youth.
I love that.
So they facilitated that. You know, I had bagels, refreshments, coffee, the whole nine. Yeah. It was a very intimate event, a handful of people. But I am going to do it again. So when I do part two,
please let me know.
Reiki into it so you can experience that. So, yeah, man, so a lot of wellness stuff. And like I said, you know, that's how I pour into me.
Yeah.
You know, and just having a great partner. And when you got a good woman with you, that just makes your life 10 times easier.
Mm-hmm. That's what they say, child.
So can you recall a moment where you've ever been so burnt out where you just wanted to hit pause on it all? And if so, you know, what brought you back?
Yeah, I would say just before COVID, the summer, I decided to do my own thing. And what put me on a path to work full-time through Garden State Hip Hop was my last agency ended up letting me go. I was at a company that I really grinded to earn an opportunity to be employed by. I thought I was doing great. I mean, I had a funny feeling very early that it may not be the best fit for me. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, that decision was made for me, but I genuinely felt that they were making a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And I stand by that. You know, what it really did, what it inspired for me was, because I knew everything I had done, like we're talking about from the inception of Garden State Hip Hop up until now. I knew the work that I put in. I knew how consistent and dedicated I was. And knowing that I can be in a position with everything I've done up until this point, and when somebody else decides that they can pull the rug from under you and they just do it without knowing what it took for you to even get there, that didn't sit right with me.
Yeah.
So I just said, like, yo, if I go down again, it's going to be on my terms and nobody else's. Because I didn't like that feeling.
Sure.
And that was especially August when you know your worth. Yeah, so in a little over a week, I'll be celebrating 6 years of being self-employed. So
congratulations, major.
I got let go from that company the week after my 30th birthday. So yeah, just kind of like that rattled me, you know? And then I took a week to just enjoy summer, clear my head, figure out what my next move would be. That company kept me on payroll until like I think the end of September. I stayed on their payroll, so I have money coming in.
Okay. As you should,
you know. And I just put my game plan together, reached out to a friend that sent me like a standard contract, and within weeks, and going back to how God works, I had one of my former clients from the first agency I worked at in Manhattan reach out and say, yo, Rye, you still doing PR? I got an album coming out. His name is YB. He goes by 808 Beezy now. Christian hip hop artist, super dope. Check him out. He was my first client when I decided to work through Garden State Hip Hop and have it function as a boutique PR agency. That was August 2019, and here we are almost 6 years later.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's what's up.
Yep.
Listen, 6 years being self-employed in your early 30s is an accomplishment. So congratulations.
Yeah, thank you, brother.
As a black man as well.
Thank you.
You know, and, you know, that's one of the things and reasons why we wanted to touch on what exactly that you do as far as your mental health and your mental space, because that's needed, especially when you're working on your own and doing your own thing. You have a lot of stress of figuring out how exactly are you going to be able to get by, especially now that you have a family.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you may be wanting to grow your family and so on and so forth. So you're doing your thing.
Thank
you know
you,
what I'm saying?
Likewise.
I'm very proud of you.
Look at us.
You know, God is good. You know what I'm saying? We all here doing what we got to do as black men, child. You know, look at look at Mar. Mar over here, a daddy, you know, got him a beautiful yeah. You know what I'm saying? Sitting over there looking all pretty and shit. They about to go on a date later. Look at me. You know, just.
I put my business all out there. Ain't nobody ask you all that.
I mean, you know what the people wanted to know. I ain't say where y'all going. Right. But you
anybody
know.
Anybody on here talking about you putting your ass on Instagram?
I sure was. If you know, if you want to follow me, it was out. Yes, it was. It was out. You know, nice and.
I'm scrolling on my damn timeline. I see gay black ass on my damn.
Nice and
this?
Fat, honey. Okay, nice and plumped. Them squats be working. Yes. So speaking of squats,
speaking of squats. Man. You see how you be doing this transition sometimes?
What a segue.
So we talking about, so back to Garden State Hip Hop real quick. So Garden State Hip Hop has been one of the central to bringing, you know, like Mar said, it's one of the central places to bring attention to a lot of Jersey Shore and Jersey hip hop artists. So why do you think that communities sometimes overlook or sideline their own culture as a black community? You know, I feel like that a lot of us, especially when we have artists and people that are specifically in our community, we don't support them until maybe like they get on or like we see them on TV or anything of that sort. So why do you think that communities sometimes overlook or sideline specific artists or specific things?
I don't think we completely understand the power that we have. You know what I'm saying? And just the strength that we have in building community and cultivating it. And that's a great question, because I was just thinking about what I was trying to do. There's the reason why I shifted my attention from the entire state at one point with Garden State Hip Hop and made it specific to the area we grew up in, because I wanted to cultivate a scene using all the experience and knowledge I acquired through internships and some of my earliest jobs in the music business, to cultivate a scene in the community to help artists get deals.
Yeah.
So much so, when you cultivate a scene in a little area with the cool niche history and it's buzzing and people are talented and you're selling out shows, we could potentially create a music row in Nashville.
Yep.
Where you have record labels, publishers, management companies, creative spaces. We create this new ecosystem within our area, and everybody's rising to the top. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
We have examples of it. We see some of the trends in music. Okay, we have a Cardi B break. Who follows Cardi? Ice Spice. Okay, there's these little weird skater, surfer guys in LA. They're called Odd Future. Who comes out of that? Tyler, the Creator.
Yep.
Frank Ocean. Sid, the Internet. You got my man in the Bear, who's an actor now. You got one of the most poetic lyricists in the game, Earl Sweatshirt.
Yep.
These are kids that were hang out on Fairfax in LA, yep. and now they're some of the most influential people in pop culture.
Right. It's crazy.
There's other Odd Futures. There's other QCs and Migos and Lil Babies throughout the world, throughout the country. I wanted to cultivate that in our area.
Because they're right in our area.
Because they're right in our area. Mm-hmm. And with all my experience with operating Garden State Hip Hop, for me, it was never a question of the talent. It was a question about the other things.
Mm.
Everyone's dope. Everyone has potential.
It's what you're using with it.
It's what you know, how you're managing it, you know, and just your understanding of the business that you say you want to be a part of.
Yeah.
So it's just not recognizing the power and the potential that we truly have. But in order for you to understand that, you need experience.
That's true.
You need experience. And I think sometimes with the lack of experience, you just don't know what you could possibly do.
Yeah.
That's facts. Do you feel like that in our community, with what you're doing, it is, obviously it's helping because we have people like we just mentioned Encore. Mm-hmm. We mentioned HD Picasso. You know, HD was also in our episode last episode. These are people that were actually affiliated with, with Garden State Hip Hop and have worked with you and now are excelling and doing what they're doing in hip hop as well. So do you feel that as you continue to do with what you're doing, are you bringing more people in, educating more people in our community so we can continue to grow? Do you feel like that is your responsibility now?
Not anymore. And I tried to do it and I kind of got burnt out by that.
Okay.
To answer your question, there are a ton of success stories from people I've worked with over the years who've gone on to do great things as artists and producers and DJs. But in terms of when I emphasize the area that we're from, I think it, at the end of the day, it benefited me more than anybody else. And
right.
That wasn't the goal.
Mm.
So it kind of feels like a failure
because
I didn't accomplish what I really wanted to accomplish. It helped me, but the goal was for everybody to find themselves in certain positions with certain opportunities. Some of these artists should be touring artists now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And again, I didn't make the vision explicit during my run prioritizing the area. Mm-hmm. I didn't make that the vision I had in my mind. And as we all know, a lot of people just lack vision.
Yeah.
Even if you are trying to give them the game.
Yeah.
What's the expression? You could lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink it.
That's facts. You know?
So... yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of success stories, but in the realms of the area specifically, I think it benefited me the most.
So as of today, like right now, what is Garden State Hip Hop?
So Garden State Hip Hop, man, it's a PR agency, as I said before. It functions as a boutique PR firm, but also we produce content, consulting, creative consulting, and those are the primary functions of the business right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So are you still
doing... And then also just some of my grassroots, I've incorporated some of the grassroots activism work I do, which is rooted in hip hop. Mm-hmm. You know, if you really understand the culture of hip hop.
That's what I was going to get
into. You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of the social work and grassroots activism, it all comes from hip hop.
Yep.
You know, so I'm finding different ways to incorporate the brand into my grassroots initiatives, whether it be speaking at nonprofits, whether I had the opportunity to speak at Free Old Borough High School last year during Black History Month. Yeah,
that's really dope.
So tapping into that, figuring out a way to incorporate the brand. I also had a hip hop education course through the Boys and Girls Club right before the pandemic hit called Lyricism 101.
Love it.
That I taught 3 days a week to students in the district, third, fourth, and fifth graders.
Love that.
So it was teaching youth the history of hip hop. The academic components were creative writing, public speaking, and interpersonal communication skills through lessons in hip hop and using the culture of hip hop. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Mm. It was a really dope program. I'm not going to take all credit for it. It was a curriculum that was designed in conjunction with some other prominent hip hop educators. But when I got the curriculum, when I got the booklet, I always remember, they're like, yo, this is the curriculum here, but you have full creative freedom to adjust any of the lessons. So
it was yours. You did it.
Yeah, I remixed like the first 10 like lessons.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
We gave it to you. It was yours.
I was piecing like a full year's worth of programming before COVID shut me down. But I remixed. I took it as a template, but I like sat and remixed every lesson.
As you should.
So I can present it the way I wanted it to. So hip-hop educator as well, and incorporating that into the business model. Yep.
I love that. Yeah. Listen, everybody has to go to GardenStateHipHop.com.
Yeah.
If you are an artist, you have to, you know, definitely want to work with Rod. He is amazing. So before we let you go, we're going to play a little game called Hip Hop Hot Seat. So we got a few questions.
Can I talk? Before yes, we do ahead. That, and I think this is important to share, this is another reason why I wanted to come on here, just some of the grassroots organizing I've done, if you guys don't mind.
No.
Because, you know, I got hip to some things over the past few years, and just to give you a quick background on that, I got more engaged in, like, social justice stuff in 2011. I went to, like, a Stop the Violence rally in Newark with my stepfather. One of the keynote speakers that day was James Ntoume. James Ntoume, for the viewers, he is a music savant. He was also a social justice, like, organizer and activist. Everyone knows James Ntoume. They may not know his legacy or his face, but his big song was Juicy Fruit, which was sampled by Puffy to create Juicy for the Notorious B.I.G. We grew up with Ntoume, so yeah, we know, but say, anybody know else who may not know, that's who Ntoume was. He was one of the keynote speakers that day, but it wasn't his words that stuck with me. It was the words of a local organizer who came up to the microphone towards the end of the event, because it was a packed house, and all these people had these concerns, what's going on with the kids, why are they wilding out, like, what are the solutions? She got up on the mic, and she said, I'm like paraphrasing, but she said this verbatim. She's just like, you know, we've been in this community for years, and this is what she said verbatim. And all y'all showing up today for some damn Ntoume. And she said it with such disappointment and disgust. Mm-hmm. And it just stuck with me, because it's like, here this woman is, a local organizer, who's clearly passionate and really upset.
Right.
Man, we've been out here for years trying to get mobilized.
And nobody was out here.
And nobody was out here. But we bring a famous, relatively famous person.
Right.
Y'all packing the damn place, trying to act like y'all care about what's going on out here.
That's sad.
That was in 2011, right? So since then, I would say from 2012 to 2015, I started dipping in and out of city council meetings in Asbury Park specifically. My father's side of the family is from Asbury Park. My grandfather, Earl Riller, he owned several businesses and real estate in Asbury Park throughout the 70s and 1990s, was one of the first, one of the few African-American homeowners in Wall Township, had a farm. He did his thing. The two businesses, most notably, that he owned and operated in Asbury Park was a 24-hour deli and a railroad plaza and a cab stand, City Cab, owned by the train station.
Oh, yo! You know how many Haitians your fucking grandfather employed?
Yeah, word.
He helped all of my uncles and godfathers, and we thank you so much.
So the heart was always in Asbury. Played my first 2 years of Pop Warner football in Asbury. Mm-hmm. Moved out of town in '98. So the heart and spirit and soul was always Asbury Park, aside from just the family legacy, right?
Of course.
So dipping in and out of city council meetings from 2012 to 2015, one thing I saw that I didn't like was, but the reason why I was doing that was I was trying to get enough data, understand what's really going on in town, and to see where people's priorities were, because I was trying to build a coalition to take control of the West Side Community Center in Asbury Park. So I failed to reach that goal, but I was able, one person I got closer with during that time was Brother Wade Muhammad.
Okay.
From the barbershop.
Oh, the barbershop. Yeah, the barber. Yeah.
So we weren't able to meet that goal with the West Side, but we were able to plan and organize a trip to Washington, D.C. for 10/10/15
nice.
For the 20th anniversary of the Million Man March, mm-hmm. which was very special to me because my father went to the Million Man March in 1995 and told me stories about it, had a T-shirt. So I always said to myself when I became an adult, if I had an opportunity to be a part of something like that, I would do it and not just go. I would want to bring other people with me.
Love
like,
it.
I don't know if anybody saw the movie Get on a Bus by Spike Lee.
No.
They were going to the Million Man March, but I wanted to be a part of an experience like that. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So for viewers who may not be familiar with Minister Farrakhan and the Million Man March, that was in pop culture, it became known as the Million Man March, but it was actually the Day of Atonement for black men to be better fathers,
yep.
leaders, members of their communities. Iconic, historic day. Yeah. Don't nobody know where all that money went. You know what I'm saying? Oh, but anyway, it was a beautiful day. 10/10/15 came. We took people from the area. We had two coach buses, and it was just a beautiful experience. And then that day, Farrakhan said, and this stuck with me too, man. He said he wanted 10,000 strong in their communities to step up, to be present, to be leaders. And that meant something to me, man.
Yeah.
So, after that, you know, I was at when Cap went through everything he went through, I was at the NFL headquarters protesting. And then the fallout of 2020, the social unrest was where everything kind of like turned up for me because I was very active and engaged out at protests. The town I live in now, I gave a speech. And during that speech, unbeknownst to me, a gentleman in the crowd was a member going back to the way God works, right? One of the gentlemen in the crowd, when I was giving a speech at a protest, he was involved with one of the local chapters of the NAACP and had ties to local governments throughout the county that I live in. So I went from giving a speech to the following week, holding a meeting with some reps from the attorney general's office, some other state officials, the chief of police in the town that I live in, the head of community policing in the town that I live in. He and I created an alliance to establish an after-school program to help improve relations between local law enforcement and families and youth that live in the town that we live in. So we were able to do that. That was in 2020.
Is this the town that you live in now?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
wow, that's dope.
That's what I'm kind of surprised.
Yeah.
As
so
well.
I went on to, man, I met with Andy Kim during that run. You know, Andy Kim is. Just look him up, you know, just a very respected politician, a progressive Democrat, a dude I really rock with. I think he has good intentions with his politics. And as I said before, he's a progressive Democrat. You know, we have corporate Democrats who I consider to be problematic. So I'm rolling with some of the more progressive ones.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to support that party, I kind of like identify as an independent,
right?
But if I rock with a Democrat, it's going to be a progressive one. And Andy Kim is a progressive Democrat. Shout out to Andy and his secretary. I believe she still works for him, Antoinette. So yeah, we created the after school program. Initially, that was supposed to be something similar to Colin Kaepernick's Know Your Rights initiative. But you know, different visions and plans, and I put my ambitions to the side just for the betterment of the project. We were able to operate that for 2.5 years, but I wanted to get this bit off, and then we can move on because I know we got to wrap soon. I did a back-to-school giveaway, what's that, two years ago now, time flies.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it opened my eyes to a lot of systemic issues in black and brown communities specifically.
Yeah.
So, you know, in this particular area, in the county that I live in, you know, they do provide some affordable housing. But the issue I ran into when I was trying to produce this event, this back-to-school event, was the property managers had already labeled and judged the people who lived there, so they denied me. So when I'm speaking to the property management company to get the green light to do this event, they're saying things, for one, we talked about coded language and language.
Right.
Just saying everything except we know what they probably really want to say.
Yeah.
Right? To deny me access to do this event. And then talking about their board members. And I'm asking, well, can I speak to their, oh, you know, the board, you know, that's private. You know, we don't really connect people with the board members. So you have board members that make decisions for people that aren't even their neighbors. They don't even live in this community, but they're making decisions on their behalf. Mm-hmm. How does that work?
I was about to say how that works.
Went on to present evidence from the after-school program, which was called TEAM, Teach, Educate, Aspire, Mentor. Presented evidence from some of the events that we did with the kids, videos and pictures. Boom, that defies everything that you said about the kids and the people that lived here. Mm-hmm. Got the green light to do the event. But that experience taught me this isn't just one isolated scenario. This is everywhere.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Where black and brown folks live, whether, you know, poor, working class, whatever, you know. We're not fighting enough.
Yeah.
We're not pushing back.
Mm-hmm.
And bro, I wish I still had the pictures and videos on my phone. The way the pool looked, the way the basketball court looked, you got all these kids living in this neighborhood and y'all letting them go out like this as adults. You wouldn't want this for your child, but you don't have a problem with them going out like this.
Right.
And in your mind, you judge them, you stereotype them.
Right.
So you point the finger back at them for their circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't ask for this. I'm talking about kids. I'm not talking about parents.
Right.
I'm talking about kids. So they're not deserving of
this. They didn't choose this.
Because they've been vilified, right? Mm-hmm. They're ignorant. They're ghetto. They're this. They're all these bad things.
But they're not even helping to make a difference.
They're not even trying to make a difference. You know what I'm saying?
They are trying to make a difference, but it's the wrong difference. You know what I mean? It's all based off of, you know, like you said, they're already prejudging, stereotyping. Like, they know what environment they're creating for these people and these kids.
Right.
They
just it's don't, intentional. They just don't care. That's the intentional. Point that I'm making. It's very intentional, right? And it's just not that area. This is everywhere. So that's one of the messages I wanted to come on this podcast and get across, yo. Yeah. Look around. Look at what's happening where you live, man, and ask yourself, what can I do? You don't have to be a millionaire to get involved, bro.
Yeah. No.
You know what I'm saying? You ain't got to treat it like a 9-to-5 to get involved and help some people out. You know, I have a relationship with one of the local churches where I live. And in fact, they sponsor me for the back to school event that I was able to do. They provided some of their funds and resources. And that's another thing. You find allies. I'm not just talking black folks. I'm talking whoever.
Yep.
Whoever has the same mentality. You find those people and you build with those people and make things happen, man, because it's a lot of people who do care. And that's who you want to rock with.
That's facts.
Because, bro, I mean, it really, you know it, but then when you experience it and you're talking to people and it's like, yo, like, what? Like, I just wanted to cuss this lady out.
No, seriously, it's annoying. Because
it's just like, yo, you don't know what you're talking about.
It's ridiculous.
You know, like, we've been here. Other people have been here.
Yeah.
A woman from the church has run a homework club, another after-school program in this community for over a decade. You're the property manager, so you're not trying to build relationships with the people that are trying to do things that are positive?
Right. And they don't even know what's going on in the community.
And they don't care, and I understand business. You don't get paid to care.
Exactly.
And this is why the people in our neighborhoods and our communities, we have to speak up and fight for our communities. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because, listen, we going to keep going out like this. And I've seen it with my own eyes, bro.
You know what? And it's crazy because it's going to be a lot of people that will skip right over this, what we're talking about right here.
Mm-hmm. I hope not.
I hope not, too.
Yeah.
But, you know what I mean? It's a lot of people that will come for the jokes and all the BS that comes with that. But this is vital information.
It is.
Right? And I'm happy that, you know, because Gabe was getting ready to go to the hip-hop hot seat. And in my mind, I was thinking to myself, like, because we asked you, it was like, what did you want to talk about?
Yeah.
And you said, you know, sociopolitical engagement. And, you know, I immediately, you know, looked that up. And what stood out to me the most, and I think that's been, you know, just the premises of our whole conversation, is building community.
Community, right. Yeah.
And making the people in your community self-aware of what's happening. And you have the power, you have the control to, you know, fix your community. But you have to do the work.
You know what I mean?
Like, you have to be involved, right? Like you said, you have to be involved and you have to, just stop accepting just anything, you know what I mean? And start, you know, start taking accountability for your community, the people around you. It takes a village, right? You need to start getting back to that.
100%, too. Man, because the thing is, the game is, it's we do nothing. We find ways to prevent from, you know, prevent things from happening.
We find ways to complain.
And then you point the finger back at the people and blame them for their circumstances and tell them this is why this is happening to you.
Right.
Nah, you don't get to do that anymore, man. But before we rap, I met a brother in Brooklyn. I forget what section he was. I met him at an art gallery in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. They were having what's happening in Philly. I don't know if it got resolved with the unions going on strike, but this didn't have anything to do with the unions in Brooklyn. They just weren't coming to the hood to pick up the trash.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? This is in Brooklyn, New York. Mm-hmm. So this brother with some other residents in the neighborhood, they created their own neighborhood initiative to properly do garbage removal. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And it became, look, right? Oh, damn. They mobilizing like that, or they making us look bad.
Yeah.
So now you got city, local officials trying to come. And now what? Magically, the sanitation workers are coming.
Right,
to pick
now
up the
y'all
want to
do
now.
Y'all work
because you start making people look crazy.
Exactly,
and that's what it's gonna take.
Yep.
Did y'all see? There's a community that was started in like Arkansas or something like that, an all white community.
I heard about that.
The KKK?
No. It's literally like they built like an all white community. It's like 40 families, and yeah, it's like you can apply to live in that community.
Not apply like it's a senior home.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, man, because the greatest thing about this country is its multiculturalism.
Yeah, exactly.
So you could live out in King of the Hill.
That ain't nothing but that man that's in office.
So my question for y'all, do you think that if we were to start an all-black community, that it would...
I don't want to do that.
I don't even think I subscribe to that because, I mean, if you look up on Zillow now, you have some experience in real estate, right?
No.
Oh, okay, I thought you... well, I mean, I see you in a certain tie so often, man.
I put that shit on.
But anyway, it's like, yo, Detroit, Michigan is for sale right now. You know what I'm saying? There's cities, you know, like.
You said Detroit, Michigan?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like there's different cities. Like when you talk about a Rosewood or we glamorize the Black Wall Streets, there are places that are for sale right now.
Literally.
Literally for sale that we could build up. But it's like. I think, you know, in terms of parts of our history, we like the idea of certain things, but who really wants to...
Who wants to do that?
Who really wants to do it? Who really wants to do it?
If we were to do that, how do you think the rest of the world would react? Do you think we would have another Black Wall Street? Or do you think it would be kumbaya? Everything would be cool.
It's definitely not going to be kumbaya. I don't think that it's going to...
I mean, this is just
I don't want to say too much, but I'll say this. Like, look at the history and legacy of redlining.
Yeah.
And people have, I've been on other podcasts with people outside of the culture and had been a part of social circles, people outside of the culture that don't understand the history. When you just put these things on the table, you meet people that are like, wow, I didn't know that, and I feel you, and that makes sense, or they get angry. Or they become dismissive.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is this, and I'm not complaining about it. The history is just there. It's always, we go here, there's someone trying to like
there's
go like
trying
this.
To pull us back.
And it's systemic, and it's foul. And over the course of history, there are countless examples. You know, we can talk about like Reconstruction. You know, we're being integrated into society post-slavery. We're getting the opportunity to vote. I'm going to hit you with poll taxing.
Yep.
I'm going to hit you with black codes. I'm going to make you take a literacy exam. I'm going to find different ways to disqualify you, even presently, you know, different forms of voter suppression in different communities. Mm-hmm. So it's very intentional. It's very sneaky. The history of redlining, you know, the projects is a project.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? The hood doesn't become the hood by mistake. When I was in Oakland, I went to the Oakland Museum. There was a beautiful Black Panther Party exhibit, and they dug into to how they created the suburbs and how they, you know, destroyed thriving Black communities to create highways and bridges so people can safely commute from their suburban homes to the metropolitan jobs. Yep. This is just a reality. You know what I'm saying? And the history speaks for itself. So a lot of this stuff is systemic and by design. It's not because we're violent, soulless people. Yeah. You're not going
to
sell me.
Because even if we do get those successes, or if we even if we were to be the Black Wall Street or anything like that, we have these things technically already. We have these areas that are successful as Black people. Atlanta, Houston. Mm-hmm. You just said Detroit. Detroit is a growing Black area. Yeah. That's thriving. And once was thriving. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So we have these places, but there's always something or someone or some people that are going to hold us back. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I just like, you know, to circle back and just to bring everything.
And we're not even talking about one particular culture. I want to.
No, it's everybody. It's everybody. It's not just us. But just to bring back into the whole full circle of community, we have to go out there and continue to speak our voices in these spaces. So these people can actually make these changes. The others that are actually trying to hold us back can say, okay, they're actually doing the work. They're showing the proof. So we don't, like you said, with the whole thing with Brooklyn, so they can look stupid so they can actually do their fucking job.
Exactly. Exactly.
Just like how you did with the whole situation in Brick. You made that hoe look stupid. Okay. And she did her fucking job. Okay.
Tell everybody where Rodney lived.
Okay. Oh, well, listen. Hopefully they didn't hear. But listen, you made her look stupid, and they did their fucking job. So all in all, as we wrap this up.
Sociopolitical engagement, people. Get with your community.
Please.
Find out who your mayor is. Find out when your city council meetings are. You know, get involved.
Now is actually the perfect season, too. This is the season for that, too.
There's a lot of, with all the changes with the current administration, the Big Beautiful Bill, you know, mutual aid is becoming more and more important. I've heard stories of just, like, communities. Even, you know, families that may be receiving government assistance, how people are like leveraging that to help their neighbors in their communities, bro. Like, that's what it's about. Mm-hmm. Mutually lifting each other up, mobilizing, and just, yo, having a shared vision, a shared goal. I'm not even just talking about Black people, you know.
No, it's
everybody. I'm very rainbow coalition, all underserved people. Anybody who feels like they got a knee on their neck, I'm rocking with you. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But just, yo, find your community.
Yeah.
Right? That's been a constant.
Find your tribe.
Find your tribe and do things that are positive. We're only getting older. Think about your legacy. Think about your children's legacy and what their future will look like. And just find a way to help make a better tomorrow for everybody. Not to sound corny or cheesy at all.
I love that. Thank you so much.
When you said Rainbow Coalition, I felt that. Because, you know, that's just the way we was brought up.
Yeah.
I mean, we weren't really brought up to see color in that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were taught to love everybody, you know, respect everybody, and you know, and that's just the way it is. You know, just every time I see Rob, bro, the one thing that I think of, that story when at the red and white scrimmage with my dad.
Oh, yeah.
Every time I see Rob.
God bless him, man.
Yeah, that is one of my favorite stories when me and Rodney had gotten to a fight at the red and white scrimmage.
Not y'all scrap.
Yeah, it was competitive.
This man is always
hot. Yeah, it was hot, man. You know, yeah.
Like, we was going at each other the whole time. And, yeah, just, you know, we 17, 18 years old, you know what I mean? Like,
if y'all noticed,
and you know, Mar it was really no beef because we just sat in the locker room and looked at each other. If we really had a problem, we would have, you know, fought.
Kept it going.
Yeah, yeah, but it was just the heat. It was literally the heat of the moment.
We were perfectly fine.
Mar has scrapped every single guest that we've had on this show. Every single male guest, I should say. He fought Rob.
That wasn't even HD. That wasn't really a fight. We had equipment on and stuff. Like, we was fine.
And Rod just tussled.
Listen, the funny part about this story is, right, so when we was fighting, our coach had yanked us up and tossed us off the field or whatever.
Yeah, we got
and
kicked out of the game.
Yeah, we got
my
kicked out
God
of the game.
Today.
We went to the locker room, whatever. This is in front of all our friends and parents. And
yeah,
family,
yeah,
so
it was a bad look.
So we in the locker room. Like I said, we in the locker room. Me and Rob, we good at this point.
Yeah, it was nothing as soon as we, yeah, go ahead.
We in there. No. You're gonna say what he said. So out of nowhere, we just see my dad. He pokes his head around the corner. He pokes his head around the corner and is looking in the locker room. And the coach who was with us at the time was like, sir, excuse me. Can I help you? Are you okay? Like, what do you need?
Coach put his hands on my son. Was like, yo, like, it was so, his body, the energy he came in with, It's like, yo, did he sprint over here?
Because he was right behind us. Yeah, he was like, right behind us. Like, we literally weren't in there for that
Michael
moment.
Don't fucking play about his fucking kids.
He wanted smoke.
I'm fine. I just want to talk to the coach that put his hands on my son.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm just like, dad, go back. Go sit down.
No, man. Fuck that.
Go sit down.
What the fuck is he talking about?
Years later, though, I don't know if I ever told you this, right? I don't know. My mom could just be talking, but supposedly she told me that it was her that made him get up and go, you know, see about that.
Yeah, because, yeah.
Because if he didn't go, she was going to go. And he was like, no, you're not going to go. I got it.
I mean, you're a father now, but we're just older, right? Yeah. All of us. We're all men now.
Absolutely.
It was important for your father to do
Absolutely.
That. And I would never judge anyone from the area we grew up with, but
100%.
Dare I say that possibly many people we were surrounded by didn't think we had men in our lives with that type of presence.
Absolutely. Right. I agree.
So it was important. As a man now,
a black man.
Your dad did that.
Yeah.
That's facts.
I'm grateful and thankful that he did that. Just to let him know, like, nah.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That was important for him to do that, man.
1,000%.
God rest his soul.
For certain. And that, like I said, that's something that just sticks with me, you know, to this day. Every time I see you, I crack up and think about that.
Mm-hmm.
But go ahead. No, hip-hop hot seat.
Okay, so before we go, so we're going to do a little hip-hop hot seat. So we're going to ask a few questions. We'll just ask like one or two questions. So real quick, let's say it's going to be a versus battle between Kendrick Lamar and J. Cole. Who do you think is going to win?
Dot.
I got J. Cole.
You think K. Dot?
Yeah.
I think K. Dot
versus battle?
Yeah.
I got J. Cole.
I think if you asked me before Not Like Us, I probably would have went with Cole.
But that's just one song, though.
No, it just changed.
I think, man, I don't want to spend too much time on it. I just feel like Cole's was more, and I feel like Cole's female audience is larger.
Yes, than it's a lot.
So that alone would have given him an advantage.
Yeah.
And I just think the Jay-Z affiliation, the bigger mainstream hits, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before Not Like Us, I would have went with Cole. Not Like Us now. K. Dot. And I'm more of a Kendrick fan. Anyway.
I was just about to say I'm a Kendrick fan myself.
Yeah, but
so you mentioned Jay-Z now.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good one. Jay-Z or Nas?
I'm a Nas guy, yo.
Okay.
I just identify. I love them both, but I just, for me as someone who's like a seeker,
mm-hmm.
I see that in Nas.
Yeah.
He's a seeker. He's a thoughtful person. Not to say Hov isn't. He's just in a different way.
He is.
Jay explained to us, like, what he would say, like.
He's a businessman.
He said a line, like, truthfully, I would rather, like, rap like Talib Kweli, but after I sold X amount of records, I haven't rapped. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's communicated, I would love to be this way, but, yo,
I'm a businessman.
I'm a capitalist, I'm a hustler. Bro. Like, yeah, I mean, everyone
is. You technically answered that question from earlier, too. The lyric question.
Okay, yeah.
What lyric still hits?
You see how that came full circle?
Yeah.
Good job on that one.
Look at God.
Yeah, after I sold like 20 mil, I ain't rhyme like Common Sense or something like that. Mm-hmm. Something within that vein. But definitely Nas for me.
Okay, so let's say last question. So let's say that we were in a cookout. Who do you think is going to get more spins, Drake or Future?
Drizzy.
I could agree because he's a little bit more mainstream.
At a cookout?
Okay, let me rephrase. Let's say your cookout. Who's going to get more streams, Drake or Future?
At my cookout?
I would say Drake.
Future.
I would say Drake. Because, and think about it, right? I would say Drake probably gets a little bit more radio spins.
Yes.
Especially outside of black radio.
Yes, mainstream.
Mainstream. So I think you have to go with Drake because he's a bit more mainstream than Future is.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
Yeah.
I would say for me and Jamar's cookout, we playing all Future. We playing mainly Future.
So hold on. We got a couple more questions.
Okay.
One track you were playing to hype yourself up?
Oh, man, that's a great question. But what is my go-to right now when I'm just really trying to get, like, locked in?
Speaking of Future, I'm going to say Future March Madness. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's up 7, there. 12 p.m.
That's one of my favorites, too.
Back in the day, if you asked me, I would have probably said Young Jeezy. Thug Motivation, something on there. He just did his 20-year
Man, I hate these questions because I listen to so much music. But listen,
Gabe,
right?
And then Gabe be like, oh, you really don't love music. Like, bro, we listen to a lot of music.
If I'm going like classic, Like a Pimp, David Banner.
Ooh.
That turns me up. That makes me want to go out. That makes me want to drink something.
Right.
Like, and
if that
I
came
feel
on the radio right now,
I'm like in my bag.
You turn that up.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Okay, I like that.
One more question. If you had to pick a rapper to babysit your kids, which I know you don't have any kids right now, I'm gonna answer this question as well. But I'd like to hear, who would you pick?
Rhapsody.
I think she would be amazing. That's a wonderful answer.
Yeah.
She is such a great woman. She seems like she would really take care of your child.
Mm-hmm.
Like she is your own.
Yeah.
Okay.
She gives me, yes, that's a good answer.
What about you, Gabe?
Who would?
Because you don't have kids. We'll save the dad for the last answer.
Who is going to watch my 2 Chainz?
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. I think 2 Chainz would.
Why?
Because I think that he is a good father. I feel like that he will
And he's a fun guy. Is he a good babysitter?
Absolutely. I feel like that babysitters are the people that are, like, my memorable babysitters are the people that I had the most fun with.
Yeah.
Like, I was the person that, like, if I, like, they were the ones I was able to go to the park, you know, go out with them. The things that my parents probably wouldn't want them to do, they pushed the envelope and did. And I feel like that, too. And then I feel like that those moments as well brings you, like, memories, but also lessons, things to learn about, all of that stuff. And I feel like that 2 Chainz is the perfect person. Like that trap nigga, he probably bring my kids to the motherfucking hood, but he will also make sure that they not gonna get shot because, you know, he got security and all that shit. Okay. You know, yeah, you know, give
you,
my
you'll have an experience in every class group.
Every class group with 2 Chainz. Exactly. You know, diversity.
Yeah. Shout out to my boy who works out with him.
So I guess if I had to pick, I'd probably say Diddy. No, I'm just playing.
What the fuck?
I was just playing. but you know what? No, he is. I'm sure he's a great father. He had what, 7 kids. I'm sure he's a great father, but no, I would not. No.
I mean,
you know
the
what?
Baby won't be ashy.
You know what?
He sure
won't. Right? Maybe be glistening. You know what? This might surprise you. You're gonna be like, where the hell did that come from? MC Light.
I can see her too.
Like
she's
MC
another
Light,
motherly person.
She took a tumble at her show this week.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But she got up and still did her thing.
Yeah.
Like a trooper. But I think she gives me good like grandmother vibes.
She
like,
would read a good bedtime story too because
oh
she's got
God, that
voice.
Oh my God,
that
voice.
Yeah.
That voice.
She does
voice
literally
BET
every
awards.
Single BET yeah. or Forever. Every award show now. She has gotten the bag.
Can
thank
you
God for MC Light.
That voice would put me to sleep with a good bedtime story and some milk and cookies. Yeah.
MC All right, Light. Y'all. So thank you so much, Roddy. We want to thank you for coming
Thanks
out.
Thanks for having
yes,
me,
thank
man.
You,
I'm sorry
Rod.
I've been talking
you.
Too much, but
no,
I was really excited to come on. I don't get to do these a lot.
Absolutely
And I
not.
Feel like I have a lot to say.
Praise God. We are happy that you came in and you talk. You can talk as much as you want. That's,
okay.
That's what we do here. It's a podcast.
Yeah.
You're supposed to talk.
We are going
to
make sure that we put all of your socials in in the description box. Make sure to let everybody know where to find you.
Absolutely.
Let them know right now.
Oh, at Rodney GSHH, at Garden State Hip Hop. That's on Instagram. I'm most active on that platform, GardenStateHipHop.com. Feel free to hit me up via email, Rodney@GardenStateHipHop.com. Very easy. Yeah, that's it, man.
Period. Thank you guys so much for listening to us. Y'all
peace
already
love,
know. We will see y'all next motherfucking time, motherfuckers.
Peace.
In another month.
Love.
Not another month. Shut up.